Hello there and welcome back to the History Rocks Cold War Special Edition. I know many of you are out there practicing and revising for the summer exam on the Cold War. And if you are doing the AQA A-level exam this summer, you might want to head over to the historyrocks.co.uk website, wherein you'll find the other podcasts that we do, but also you will find some examples of exam questions, the Section A primary source questions, that come along with some massive amount of indicative content that you can practice. And equally, we've got a bank of Cold War Section B essay questions there as well that you can practice with too. So teachers, head over there if you want to use them with your class. Students, if you're really keen and you want to get practicing, why not pick up a couple for yourself too? And if you email me, students, if you email me on hello@historyrocks.co.uk, I will send you a special code that you can use as a bit of a discount for it. How about that? Lovely. Right, so I'm going to start today's episode with a joke, because you know I like collecting them. If you have come across any great jokes, Russian or not, send them over to hello@historyrocks.co.uk and I'll read them out. Equally, if you've got any special messages you want to send out to fellow students or your favourite teacher, why not email me as well and I'll send out a little message here too. So this little joke, this little nugget I came across a couple of days ago and I quite like it. Listen to this, and this will test whether you know your Soviet history. It goes like this. Stalin was in his office and he noticed that in his study there was quite a lot of mice, quite a few mice scattering around the place. And he complained about it to his president. And the president thought about it for a moment and he said, well, why don't you just put up a sign that reads collective farm? He said, that way half the mice will die of hunger and the other half will run away. It's good. It's good. I know. Come on. Groan with me. It's good. All right, so today we're going to focus on containment. We were having a look at the spread of Soviet expansion across Eastern Europe at the end of World War II in the last episode. So you'll know that by sort of 46, 47, there's been an awful big spread of communism across various states like Hungary, Poland, Romania, etc. at the end of the war. So the Americans, of course, and the West are quite alarmed by this, really. They really do feel that some kind of action is necessary. So what is containment? Now, containment's really important to get your head around because it's launched, really, by President Truman, but it's carried on by nearly all of the American presidents thereafter him. They all believe in the view that they need to prevent the spread of communism. And that's the main objective of it. They're looking to nurture, you know, democratic, stable, capitalist, liberal Western democracies across Europe. And this is to, you know, stop the spread of communism. They do it through a variety of different methods. So the Truman Doctrine is one such method that we'll have a look at. That's where he basically donates money to Greece and Turkey in order to prevent the communists seizing control in those countries. Also, you could mention the establishment of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's usually a pub quiz question, that one. What does NATO stand for? That was established in 1949. And you might say, well, that's really about arming Western states against the communist threat. You've got America, of course, sort of heading that up with the nuclear arsenal that it has. And of course, it guarantees some sense of collective security amongst those states. So if one's attacked, then they will all sort of pile in and defend it against any communist aggressor. Marshall Plan as well, I think, is very much tied to containment. Now, Churchill would disagree with me on this one. I'm sure he called it something like the most unselfish act in history. Well, I'm not really having it. I think it's two halves of the same nut, really. It's about providing money, you know, opening up trading channels, sort of bolstering countries' economies in order to prevent communism spreading there, because they always feel that where there's prosperity, communism's unlikely to take hold. And they're looking at other countries that failed communism at the end of the war as examples. You could also mention the creation of the West German state. So literally, we've got, you know, and eventually a wall, don't we, dividing the two halves of Germany. So that, you could say, is trying to prevent the spread of communism across the whole of Germany. Reconstruction of Japan is very much part of that as well. As attention switches to Asia after the fall of China in 1949 to communism, the Americans were intent upon bolstering Japan as a sort of capitalist bulwark in that region. And it was also used extensively during the war in Korea, providing sort of military equipment and things like that, cars, trucks, that sort of thing, to that war effort. So all of these really are aspects, different methods really, of containment that various presidents after President Truman use. And it's all intent upon stopping the spread of communism. So why? Why is containment adopted? Well, there are many reasons. First things first, though, is many feel that the alternative to containment would be war. And nobody really has the appetite for that anymore. We've just gone through World War II. You know, we've poured in a lot of lives, a lot of money, and there really isn't the political will in countries to go down that route. Other things might be the fact that there was a general sense that appeasement had failed during the 1930s. Appeasement's that policy that Britain adopted towards Germany, towards Hitler, wherein you kind of giving him aspects of things that he was looking for, negotiating with Hitler, essentially, in order to avoid war. And it doesn't work, obviously, because we end up in World War II. So consequently, they see Stalin as being just as much as a dictator as Hitler was, really. He can't be negotiated with. So that's another reason. Of course, Truman, replacing Roosevelt during World War II, he comes in. He's very much advocating that he's going to take this iron fist approach towards communism. So we've got this sense of new personalities coming in that are looking to establish themselves. He's not particularly experienced, President Truman, in foreign affairs at all. So he's probably getting advice there as well about how he should project himself to the American people. You might say that Americans felt compelled to defend democracy and freedom. They've kind of adopted sort of world police status at the end of World War II. And that might be a motivation behind containment as well. Equally, you might say that there was genuine concern that the American economy itself might slip into some kind of recession or depression at the end of the war. I mean, when you're at war, you are building weapons, you're building tanks and ships and things like that. It keeps the economy sort of artificially high. Equally, of course, the Americans entered the war very late. You know, they came into it in 1941. They'd been trading for much of that period. And so at the end of the war, there's concerns that, you know, some of those markets will be lost. Now, they will be lost if they switch to communist state-planned economies. The Americans won't be able to trade with them anymore. So there was a genuine concern that the spread of communism could close markets to the American economy and consequently it'd suffer. You should also throw in there really important points about the Greek Civil War and how Britain felt that it could no longer afford to prop up the government there against the communists. Britain was in a huge amount of debt at the end of the war. I think it's about £3,000 million worth of debt, something like that. It's also having to contend with all kinds of nationalist uprisings and pressure points across the empire, in places like Palestine. And equally, it just felt that it couldn't afford to do it anymore, and that the Americans were so concerned that both countries, Greece and Turkey, were in danger of falling to communism. That's the whole reason why Truman launches his doctrine on the 12th of March, 1947. Granting, I think, in the region of $400 million in aid to Turkey and Greece. So definitely the status of Britain, but also what's going on in both of those countries, was essential in understanding why containment was adopted. Let's throw in a couple of significant advisors or influencers. Churchill, of course, very well-respected prime minister, ex-prime minister now. He gives this quite influential speech in Fulton, Missouri, where he talks about this Iron Curtain descending across Europe. Now, really, the speech was the purpose of the speech really is to convince the American Congress that action was necessary in Europe, that the Americans needed to step in and stop whatever's going on there. And of course, Truman has sympathies with that, as we know. So he's using Churchill really to address those people who might be somewhat hesitant. Equally, George Kennan, another significant influence on the American government. He was a US diplomat. He traveled across Europe at the end of the war. And he basically felt that the Soviet Union was intent upon spreading communism globally. In his long telegram, which is huge, it was about 8,000 words, he describes how the Soviet Union is set upon this and that action was really necessary. And it is Mr. X article that was published, I think, in Foreign Affairs Journal. He talks about how we need to meet communism with firm and vigilant containment. And I believe that's the first time that the term containment had been used. So because of these influences, Kennan and Churchill, because of these developments across Southern Europe, Greece and Turkey, because of, the failure of appeasement and, I guess, some desire to find an alternative to war, containment was adopted. So it's adopted by Truman, I guess sort of developed as time goes on, as sort of Eisenhower talks about containment, but talks about things like massive retaliation and things like that, which never actually come to pass. And so it continues thereafter, each president seeking to contain the spread of communism, particularly in Asia with Vietnam and Korea and things like that later on. So really significant framework, this. It's a really significant element of the American foreign policy after the war. Right, so I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for tuning in, as always. And as said before, any shout-outs, any messages, any jokes, anything you want in terms of the website we were saying before, drop me an email on hello@historyrocks.co.uk. And have a great half term, and we'll speak soon. Take care. Bye.